Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and in a moment you're going to hear a fascinating interview with an amazing clinician. And here's the pitch. Antidepressants are among the pharmaceutical industry's biggest sellers. Do you realize that more than 1 in 10 Americans take meds like Prozac? Fully 1/4 of women are taking psychiatric medications. But these drugs they're expensive and they can have serious side effects. So imagine if a natural supplement was just as effective as those powerful prescription drugs without the cost and adverse effects. Well, that's precisely what today's guest has ascertained. He's Dr. Ajay Goel, and he and his colleagues at Baylor University have performed a groundbreaking new study looking at the efficacy of curcumin in the treatment of depression. But he goes way beyond just addressing depression in his research. He is director of epigenetics and cancer prevention at the Gastrointestinal Cancer Research Lab at Baylor University Medical Center in Dallas. And if you don't know what epigenetics means, once you hear the following discussion, you're going to know a heck of a lot more about that concept. And it's a very encouraging concept because it means that the genes that we're born with are not our fate, that we can take our fate in our own hands and modify our genetic potential. Dr. Goel has spent 20 years researching cancer. He's been the lead author, a contributor to over 100 scientific articles. So he's a well-established conventional researcher. He is currently researching the prevention of gastrointestinal cancers using integrative and alternative approaches, including botanical products. And two of his favorite botanicals that he's investigating are curcumin, which comes from turmeric, and boswellia, which comes from frankincense. And you're going to hear more in the ensuing discussion about both. So without further ado, let's hear from Dr. Goel.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited. So to answer your question, how I got excited into working on some of these botanicals, and it's a long answer, but the short of it would be that I've always been interested in looking at disease prevention, and that's part of my research for a long time. And what got me interested into curcumin and some of these naturally occurring botanicals was that when I, about 15, 20 years ago, when I got into this field, I began to look at disease incidence or disease stats across the globe. And it was very interesting for me to see that there are certain diseases which are more prevalent in one part of the world, and they are much less common in other parts of the world. And that was quite puzzling to me. My roots are originally, I'm from India, and much of my research focus is on cancer prevention. And when I look at the cancer stats across the globe, it was very interesting for me to see that actually India and Africa are two countries which have the lowest incidence of most cancers. While living in U.S., where you would think probably we should have least amount of cancer because people are educated, smart, they know what they're doing, that we have probably one of the best healthcare systems and everything. And it was very intriguing to me to see that actually we have, in U.S., we have probably one of the highest incidences of every cancer. I work mostly on colon cancer, and just to give you an example, that if you compare colon cancer incidence in U.S. and India, India has somewhere between 20 to 30-fold lower incidence of colorectal cancer. I had to check these statistics repeatedly because it didn't make sense to me, because why would a country like India, where, you know, still we have literacy is still a problem, people don't hear be the cleanest here. They're not educated. They don't have access to good food, but still they are doing something every day which protects them from having this disease. And the same is true for breast cancer, lung cancer, you name any cancer. When you look at the stats which are published every year, India has one of the lowest incidences of most cancers. So that was what got me interested into this, that what is different about these people, and is it their genetics? And the answer is no, absolutely not. When we look at the genetics of people in this country versus India, we are probably 99.9999% similar. So what is different? So that was the reason. So I thought, what could be different? And the simple answer is the diets or your lifestyle, what people are exposed to on a daily basis is very different in people in India versus U.S., and diet was a huge role. And then I began to dissect this issue more systematically, and I learned that the diets in that part of the world are very different compared to what we eat here, and that's how I got interested into curcumin and other botanicals. I come from a very fundamental, basic scientific background, and for me it was very somewhat logical and somewhat exciting to put all that information together in the context of diet and lifestyle and how all of these changes would influence not just cancer but virtually every disease. And more we understand, we begin to realize really the power of diet and lifestyle. And we and others have published quite a bit of data in this regard, that actually subtle changes in diet can have tremendous, huge influences on how we all behave, how we all are predisposed to getting certain diseases or are protected against diseases. And that's part of the part of my title here at Baylor, is the term epigenetics. And I think that's where it comes in. The term epigenetics is essentially a compound word, which is epi and genetics. So genetic, we are born with certain genetic information, and really that's a hardwired static information. You really don't have any control. But I think more we learn about this process, we have begun to appreciate that it actually, unlike what we thought probably a decade or 10 years or 20 years ago, really most of the diseases, including cancers, are not genetically driven. So they are not entirely hereditarily driven. So less than 2, 3, 4% of the disease is transmitted hereditarily. So much of the disease is actually controlled by epigenetic mechanisms. So the word epigenetic essentially means is it's a process by which we extract information from our DNA or from our genes. So unlike static information in genes, which is we can't do anything. If you're born with a bad gene, really, you can't do much about it. But epigenetics is a process which basically extracts or influences our gene behavior. So, for example, if you're doing eating right, if you're exercising, if you're doing all the good things, you're positively influencing your genes and making them work the way they're supposed to behave. But if you're maintaining an unhealthier lifestyle or if you're doing all the wrong things, you can negatively influence your genes. And once you start to do that, and once you have enough negative genetic expressions, you are predisposed to getting certain diseases. So this is very exciting, because we have shown now in systematic studies that when you culture cancer cells or any cells in different dietary environments, you can influence their behavior negatively or positively. So I think we have begun to appreciate that it is not genetics, but it is the epigenetics which really controls disease behavior. And like I said, I mean, we can't completely ignore genetics. I mean, it is there, but the bigger thing which we have realized, the epigenetics is a very new field. We just began to appreciate it in the last 10 years or so. And what we are learning is that it's genetics and epigenetics are, you know, like, I can give examples of a hardware and software on a computer. So your computer has hardware, but it is no good to you unless you have a software to extract that information and to process that information. So epigenetics is a process which really extracts your genetic information in a good or a bad way. And unlike your genetics, like I said before, it is static. Genetics is static. You can't do anything. Epigenetics is a continuously reversible process, which makes it a lot more exciting. By this, what I mean is, Even if you maintain an unhealthier lifestyle and you have negatively influenced your genetic behavior for certain duration of your life, but if you decide to change your life, you can do that from today onwards. You can start maintaining good health, good diets, and all that, and you can reverse this negative epigenetic alterations and make it a positive one. So it's a continuously dynamic process which is completely under our control, unlike our genetics, which we can't do anything about. So it's really very important, and that's why we are learning all the benefits of why, even at a certain age, whether we are 10 years old or 20 years old or 50 years old, we can make this change anytime and have a positive influence on our health and preventing the risk for many diseases. So the simplest way to start would be turmeric. Turmeric is the spice. So it is a spice which is used in primarily in India and Southeast Asian countries. So it's a spice which is used for cooking and all that. So that's a spice. But curcumin is actually the active principle which is present in the spice turmeric. So while turmeric is a spice, curcumin is actually the medicine in that spice. So curcumin is anywhere between 2 to 4% of all turmeric powder. So if you extract, if you have turmeric powder, you extract curcumin, it will be anywhere between 2 to 4% of total turmeric powder, and that depends upon what part of the world, turmeric is grown, what sort of soil, what sort of environment, the turmeric plant is grown. But anywhere between 2 to 4% is the most you will get curcumin out of turmeric. And again, curcumin is the medicine, turmeric is the spice. And the yellow color of turmeric is essentially because of curcumin. So curcumin is the yellow pigment which gives turmeric that yellow color. Curcumin has many different activities, and some of the most common or the most well-studied in scientific models would be its anti-inflammatory effect, its antioxidant effect, its anti-cancer effect, but the list goes on. So there are close to 6,000 scientific studies you can find on PubMed, which is a scientific search engine of National Institutes of Health. So there are 6,000 studies published on this spice or herb in different models of disease. And I can tell you that if you were to ask me this question other ways, that is there a disease for which curcumin has not been found beneficial? And my answer would be, I cannot think of one. So it has been it has been studied in so many different disease models, and in every single model, to the best of my knowledge, it has shown some promise. And the reason it is able to do that is really not as surprising or as amazing, because for most chronic diseases, there are two root causes. One is uncontrolled low levels of chronic inflammation, which is asymptomatic. There are no symptoms. So if there is no way to control this low levels of chronic inflammation, that is the root cause of most chronic diseases. And the second is generation of too many free radicals or limiting oxidative stress. So, and these are the two things which curcumin does so effectively, and not surprisingly, it has been shown to be so effective in controlling inflammatory diseases, controlling cancer, controlling diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you name it. There are more than one studies out there which have convincingly shown that curcumin actually does help people with Alzheimer's. And I'll be happy to share with you that I'm also collaborating with a group out in Australia, where we are currently doing a similar study in patients with Alzheimer's. And we have not completed the study yet, but the data we have so far is very encouraging, and we can really see that curcumin does help prevent Alzheimer's and even patients who have early stage disease in giving them benefit from this disease. There is some evidence that it does help in patients with cystic fibrosis. And again, it goes back to the statement I made earlier. If you look hard enough, if you look on PubMed, I can almost guarantee you that there is virtually no disease which have not been studied with curcumin. And this is exciting because it has the ability to control inflammation. It has the ability to control free radicals. It has so many cellular targets within our bodies that it can do all of these activities. And on a cellular level, whether it's a cancer cell, whether it's a diabetes cell, whether it's a brain cell, the fundamental processes are very, very similar. The gene targets are very similar. So to me as a scientist, that it has such a wide variety of effects in different diseases. It is true that we are talking about curcumin or, for that matter, most botanicals, they have poor absorption or poor bioavailability when we consume them orally. But having said that, there are so many good supplements out there, and people have used very clever, very smart ways to enhance bioavailability of these botanicals in our body. And And it is very important that when we pick a botanical supplement, we have to be mindful of two or three things, which I consider very important. You have to consider a botanical which is all natural. Shouldn't have too many synthetic chemicals in there. Second, it should be better absorbed, and I'll talk to you probably a little bit more when we talk about specific studies. That in my studies, I've used a specific preparation of curcumin, which is called BCM95. So this is a preparation of curcumin I've used in my studies, and for the same reason, it is all natural, and it is anywhere between 7 to 10 times better absorbed than standard curcumin. And really that makes a huge difference, because if you're consuming a supplement which is going to be absorbed 7 to 10 times better, you're going to have that much more better efficacy compared to standard curcumin. And the third thing, it has full spectrum curcuminoids. So I think one has to be really careful what sort of supplement they're putting in their mouth. So they should really read the label carefully and make sure that they try the best supplement out there. And there are scientific studies done in humans. So these are essentially dose escalation studies. And the goal of these studies is to continue to escalate the strength of the dosing of a particular supplement. And two studies have been concluded on, have been performed on curcumin, where healthy individuals were given up to 12 grams, which is a lot of curcumin. So they were given 12 grams, up to 12 grams of curcumin for several months, and virtually there was no toxicity. And for most of the studies we have done, and I would strongly encourage that, really, in more recent years, people have really not used anywhere between 2 to 3 grams of curcumin a day. So it's extremely safe, and I can tell you that people living, there are almost 1.3 billion people living in India who consume curcumin-containing meals, which is turmeric, 3 times a day, and they have lived their lives happily, and I have yet to meet somebody suffering from any sort of toxic effects of curcumin. So I think it's extremely safe, and there's virtually no toxicity. So we did this first clinical study. It's the first human clinical trial where we wanted to investigate the effect of curcumin in people who have major depressive disorder. Now we're talking about people with severe disease. So these people have major depressive disorder, and this is very critical, because it's not a simple mood change. We are talking about people who have clinical symptoms for a deep-rooted disease. And mostly it is something, the two fundamental processes which go wrong with people who have this sort of symptoms are, one, their brain enzymes or some of these hormones, they're not right levels, you know, they're all messed up. And the second thing is, when people are majorly depressed, the formation of new brain cells, or neurogenesis, formation of new brain cells, slows down. So these are the two processes which need to be corrected in order for them to feel better. But the sad part is, most of these people end up consuming or taking these drugs we have, which are essentially SSRIs in the class of drugs, which give them some symptomatic relief by maintaining their serotonin levels, but essentially they're not being treated for correcting that defect. So it's essentially a management of their symptoms, but not really preventing or treating their symptoms. So that was really the underlying reason we took this study, because we knew that even in patients who have major depressive disorder, one of the principal causes for this disease is chronic inflammation. And we knew that curcumin is a strong anti-inflammatory. There have been actually some preclinical studies done in animals in similar models, which have shown tremendous promise, but nobody followed it up in human clinical trials. In these animal studies, it was shown that when you feed these animals curcumin, it actually promotes formation of fresh brain cells, new brain cells. I think it facilitates a faster growth of new brain cells, and it also helps raising your levels of serotonin, dopamine, and noradrenaline in your brain. So all of these things have been shown in animal studies, but this literature sort of never followed through. So we are very curious to see if we can replicate or if we can extrapolate these findings to a human clinical trial. So this is the first ever human clinical trial where we looked at the effect of curcumin in patients who have this major depressive disorder. So it was a 3-arm study. In one arm, we gave individuals their standard of care, which is their SSRI, because you can't deprive these people from their standard of care. So in one arm, patients received their SSRI. In the second arm, we gave these individuals curcumin at 500 milligram. And again, like I said before, the curcumin preparation we used in the study was this high absorption BCN95 curcumin. So we gave them 500 milligram twice a day. It's only two pills a day. So we give these patients who have such a chronic severe disease, so we give them either SSRI, give them curcumin, and this was only a 6-week study. And in the third arm, we gave them a combination of the both products. We gave them their SSRI and also gave them curcumin to see whether there would be any sort of synergy or additive effect when you give these two drugs together. So this was very interesting because we followed these patients only for 6 weeks. Just imagine, not only the dose of curcumin is very small, and the reason we did this short study because of the institutional review boards or IRBs would not allow to continue a longer study unless you really have some data to demonstrate, because you don't want to devoid, you don't want to prohibit, or you don't want to stop the standard of care for these patients. So this was a short-term study to demonstrate the feasibility and if there is any efficacy of curcumin in these patients. So just to summarize it, what we saw after 6 weeks was amazing. So what we saw in the first arm, we saw in the combination arm where we gave them SSRI and curcumin, that was the most effective arm. But that was not a big news to me because we knew that we are giving their standard of care anyway and giving curcumin, which is a strong anti-inflammatory. But to me, the most exciting part was in the two arms where we gave these patients either curcumin or SSRI, actually the effects were very similar. And they both were equally effective. So to me as a scientist, that was huge news, because if I were to pick, I never expected curcumin to work as effectively as SSRI. We knew that probably it will have some effect, but to see that the level of positive effect in reducing symptoms of major depressive disorder in the curcumin arm of patients would be almost similar to their standard of care, that was huge success and very exciting. Because so if somebody have to have a choice to consume a 1 gram pill of a natural, safe botanical or a herb versus a, which is not only going to give you symptomatic relief, but it is also actually healing you on so many other levels, including formation of new brain cells, controlling your serotonin levels and all of that, versus a drug which you're going to eventually develop side effects and resistance to. So this is huge, because in this study we only measured effects of curcumin on depression, but we also know, as we touched before, curcumin is a helps in so many other symptoms too. In just 6 weeks, just imagine if in such a short duration, using such a small dose of curcumin, we are seeing this sort of effect. If you were to, so that's something we're going to follow up now on with a much larger trial, with a much longer follow-up. We are very excited to expect that a lot of these patients probably going to benefit lot more than what they did in this short-term study. And to me, you know, it's one of those diseases. Here we looked at major depressive disorder, but at the same time, you know, a lot of people feel at times that they have these depression-related symptoms, but they're not clinically diagnosed because they don't feel comfortable going to their physician or doctor. But just imagine that even in these patients who feel at times that they have such symptoms and they don't want to share that with their family or doctor, they can at least, now they have a choice, you know, they can go to their health food store, they can pick up a bottle of curcumin, and give it a try, and it is very safe, considering it is so safe, they can give it a try, and if it really helps them, they can probably get rid of these symptoms without even having ever to worry about developing that low levels of depression into a major depressive disorder. So this is very, very exciting to me, and especially if some of these are elderly individuals, they're probably going to see a lot more overall benefit, because curcumin is not going to help only with their depression, but probably on other levels too, if other inflammatory and other symptoms as well. That's the only supplement I take, and I have no symptoms so far. I'm pretty healthy for the most part. So and I think it's something to do with the power of some of these natural medicines. And I think curcumin really is the front runner when it comes to natural alternatives, and the science behind it, this molecule is really amazing. And so Boswellia, when you extract Boswellia from the plant Boswellia serrata or similar species of this plant, actually it is a combination of many different boswellic acids which you will get out of it. But the standardization or purification of some of these boswellic acid is very important. So there are two different categories of boswellic acids present in these plants or the resin of this plant, and they're broadly categorized as alpha boswellic acid and beta boswellic acids. So beta boswellic acids actually are pro-inflammatory. So you don't want too many of these around because they increase inflammation. But alpha boswellic acid, which is the one we use in our studies and which we typically use for most of our work, are actually the anti-inflammatory component. So you really have to be careful that the boswellic acids you're using has minimal or no beta boswellic acids, but it should primarily be alpha boswellic acid. You want to have, just like I said before, you do not want to have too much, or possibly try not to have any beta boswellic acid in the boswellic acid preparation. You want to have most amount of alpha keto boswellic acids, and there are several preparations out there. And one of those which we are trying in our studies is called Bos Pure. So this is a pure alpha boswellic acid, and we are studying this Bos Pure form of aqua in our studies, and we are seeing some amazing results. We are looking at it as an anti-cancer and cancer preventative, and also we are looking at it as a possible adjunct to conventional cancer chemotherapy. So what we are seeing is that some of these, most of these patients who go on cancer chemotherapy, at some point they'll develop chemo resistance and they'll stop responding to their conventional chemotherapy. And no matter how high or what quantity of chemotherapy you give them, these tumor cells are smart. They evade the chemotherapeutic effects. So, but what we have seen is that when you take these chemo resistant cancer cells and you treat them with curcumin or aqua, you can resensitize these tumor cells, and these tumor cells begin to die, and this is the way you can kill and prevent tumor formation. So they help enhance the effect of chemotherapy, and they also try to mitigate or minimize the negative or the toxic effects of chemotherapy in your normal healthy cells. So they try to protect your normal healthy cells, but they sensitize your tumor cells to the toxic effect of chemotherapy and gives the patient much better result compared to chemotherapy alone. It's a process in works, you know. I mean, a few years back when I first started working on this concept at Baylor, there was there was not real reluctance, but I think there was sort of lack of information, education on that part. But I'm happy to share that I'm working closely with some of my traditional oncologist on using some of these botanicals as adjuncts to chemotherapy, and we are in the process of designing some clinical trials, and hopefully within the next year or so we will be doing some clinical trials. We will be giving some of these compounds to patients either in a preventative setting or as adjuncts to their standard of chemotherapy in a real human clinical trial. So, and I think by using some of these compounds, we can effectively reduce the dose of conventional chemotherapy, or we can at least hope to reduce the toxicity, some of the toxicity of these chemotherapeutic drugs on the normal cells. I think that's where the side effects kick in. So you want to kill tumor cells, but you don't want to kill your normal cells at the same rate. And I think that's where probably we do not fully understand, but I think some of the beneficial effects of these naturally occurring botanicals is that they somehow prevent killing of too many tumor cells, minimize toxicity, and they also help overcome chemo resistance, which is developed due to these conventional chemotherapies. And that is how they help make the chemotherapy look better and make the patient feel much better compared to when they are on the chemotherapy alone. I do not intend to say that the answer to every cancer or every disease is curcumin or boswellic acid. So the point is, we all do the best we can with limited set. I mean, you have to be focused. You cannot be working in any of these compounds at the same time. So while we are working on curcumin, boswellic acid, some of my other colleagues are working on other compounds. The overall message from all of these different studies and efforts is to sort of reinforce and educate people that these botanicals, which were somehow been touted as probably not as effective, now we have huge amounts of preclinical and human clinical evidence to suggest that really they are a lot more powerful than what we taught them to be. And I think now we have not only just validated that finding, but also now we have sophisticated science to back up some of these claims to show how these compounds work. And I'm only optimistic that probably in the next few more years, we're going to have a lot more scientific compelling evidence to suggest exactly how some of these compounds work and why we should give them a lot more respect than we have given them so far. So, unfortunately, we do not have a dedicated website at Baylor, but I think the one of the best and probably most logical source would be to go and look up some of these articles on PubMed, which anybody can look through PubMed, or even simply Googling the word. You can Google Scholar, and you can look up these. And that's what I tell everybody. Sometimes I get emails, phone calls all day long, people asking me, can I use this compound for this disease and all that? And my answer to them is, first thing, I do not want to interfere with their medical care. They should always consult their physician before they start something new, just to make sure that their physician or oncologist or whoever their doctor is on board with that, this change in their regimen. The second thing is, if their physician or doctor is reluctant, then they can Google these compounds on their own and find out for themselves. And since most of these compounds are extremely safe or almost virtually no toxicity, it is safe for them to try it for some time and see the effect for themselves. And if they feel better, they can continue. Otherwise, it is not one of those drugs which is going to be lethal or we should be concerned about. So most of these compounds are very safe. They can be used by themselves or together with their standard of care and let the patient decide. If they feel better, they can continue. So, and more often than not, I get positive responses that anybody who tried some of these compounds, they feel a lot more better on many levels. So this is very exciting.
I'm sure you'll agree that was a very, very exciting discussion. Our thanks go to Dr. Ajay Goel at Baylor University in Dallas, and we congratulate him on his excellent work. And it is work like this that ultimately substantiates our natural approach to various medical conditions. That's the heart and soul of intelligent medicine. And we really enjoyed talking to him and getting his scientific background on curcumin and boswellin. Good stuff. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks very much for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce. And so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via our convenient internet portal or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.